to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining me this week, as always, is the one, the only, Randy Darsh.
Hello everybody. Glad to be back for another week. I just have to say, I said this during the first Gym Podcast of the season, and I'm going to say it again. This is the greatest sport ever, because wow. I had that same exact thought going through my head for some of these games. Like, it's just so entertaining.
You seem to be in a good mood, given your team's performance this last weekend, Randy.
Not to overreact or anything.
No,
but, you know,
we would never.
He might be the greatest coach of all time, you know.
Kalen DeBust? Kalen DeBoring? We'll see. I didn't really catch any of the Bama game. I was busy watching many of the other great games this week, as well as many of the bad games this week. We have a lot to talk about, Randy. I see you have a list here. Where do we begin with this crazy weekend? Where do we start?
There are so many things I want to say and differences I've seen in certain teams and how they call the game that it's hard to almost pinpoint one thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the best way to introduce this is by talking about the new clock rules.
There's been a lot of changes. Like, a lot of changes to the sport this year.
A lot of changes. We have so for the unaware, we have like the running clock now, right? So games are much shorter. Mm-hmm. And we have the 2-minute timeout, which I actually do like, which is fairly controversial.
I don't like that it's called a 2-minute timeout. That does bother
call
me.
It a 2-minute warning. Just call it a 2-minute warning, man. But okay, so here's what I've noticed is that it seems like some offensive coordinators have not adjusted well to these new clock rules, and they kind of have like a misguided approach. You saw it in the Oregon game. Your offensive coordinator was pretty guilty of it as well.
Yep.
Where it's like they call possession quality, because you have fewer possessions, possession quality is so much more important now, right?
Right.
So, like, you have to make sure you score in as many possessions as possible. So, for example, in the Wisconsin game, I know you only won by 2 touchdowns, right? Mm-hmm. But, for example, in the first half, you only had 3 total possessions.
3 possessions.
But 3 possessions. But on those 3 possessions, it was a field goal, a missed field goal, so you got in scoring range, and a touchdown.
Right.
So, they were quality possessions, right? But still, you kind of had that low-scoring struggle of a game a little bit.
You got to.
But I've never seen some offensive coordinators do this, but they do it in such an extreme conservative manner that it's like their quarterbacks never take any downfield passes because every play has to get at least enough yards to keep the drive going.
Right.
And it's like, listen, dog, if your quarterback is scared to throw into the heart of the defense, or if he never does it, he's not going to be ready to throw into the heart of the defense when it's time to throw a touchdown. To throw a touchdown pass, you have to throw directly into the heart of the defense. There's no other option. You got to be confident.
I noticed this in particular with Florida State and DJ Poo, as we all call him now, especially in that first game against Georgia Tech. Like, nothing. They weren't throwing any passes beyond the line of scrimmage, for God's sake. And it's just, that's not going to instill any confidence in your quarterback, like you're saying.
I'll even give a counterexample to that. Kind of a counterexample of a team that, quote-unquote, did it well was Oregon versus Idaho. They only won by 10 points versus Idaho, and it was a dogfight late into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Dylan Gabriel, he literally completed a school record completions for that game, but still somehow kind of looked bad.
I know.
Doing it because they were all these, like, sideways horizontal passes. Mm-hmm. Nobody's throwing it downfield, and it's just, it seems like it's a very misguided attempt to adjust to the new clock rules and try to have these quality possessions, but I think it misses the mark. And I'm gonna throw Alabama out there. I know it's just Western Kentucky, but what I really appreciated is that it seemed like it doesn't matter if it was 3rd and 15, 3rd and 20, mm-hmm. or 1st and 10, we have an equal chance at converting the first down or scoring a touchdown. They are aggressive. Our offensive coordinator is aggressive in how he, you know, calls his plays, and it makes our players confident. You know, they practice this way. They practice these aggressive plays. Right. They spent all summer learning this style, so they are ready to go out and attack.
I agree. And
I wanted to make another point.
Yeah.
I have another point about the physicality of the game.
Please.
You know, they're also trying to mix this in with, like, this slow type of game where they focus on possession quality is very reminiscent of, like, Big Ten football, which you're aware of, especially being a Wisconsin fan.
Yes,
Barry Alvarez and all that.
Yeah.
The thing is, that doesn't really work in these shorter games because the whole point of that is to wear your opponent down over time, right, with physicality. But if the game's shorter, you're not going to wear them down. The depth doesn't really matter.
That's true. I haven't really thought about that. Like, it is interesting to think, like, a longer possession doesn't mean quite as much because it's overall less time spent on the field, right? It's like fewer plays compared to before, just because the clock is continuously running now throughout the entire game, you know?
Physicality absolutely still matters, but it matters more on a moment-to-moment basis instead of like a long-term survival. We're here, hold the four fingers up kind of thing. It doesn't matter to that extent anymore as much as on a play-by-play basis. You got to be stronger and put up part of that one play.
I noticed that too with Wisconsin versus Western Michigan. Like in years past when we ran these kinds of, you know, grind-mode games or whatever, like by the fourth quarter, the opponent would be, you could tell there was just a difference. Right, in terms of, like, talent. And they would just be totally, you know, winded. You could, like, get those explosive plays. And I've noticed fewer with Wisconsin getting big plays in late in the game, as well as with other teams. Like, it's just, it is just harder to wear down opponents, I think, given the new rule set, you know? Wild.
Very true, very true. That was a big rant. I did not expect it to be that heated and that passionate this early into the show.
It's definitely, I mean, the games feel different. I've definitely noticed this, but the clock changes. It does feel like there's fewer possessions. We've seen a lot of games this year. Again, Florida State, Georgia Tech, I keep coming back to. Like, I think Florida State had the ball 7 times that entire game. Like, it's like a different ball game at this point because of the new rule change. So, going to be interesting.
I will say
to see.
The reason we were also so passionate about this, I think it was like literally the 11 a.m. games we had already started pointing this out to each other.
Yeah.
Like, do you notice this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole day, the whole weekend, it was like that. One counter to this, like an actual game that was high flying and fast paced and very like high octane, to me, the game of the week was USC versus LSU on Sunday night. Both those teams, for what it's worth, I know everyone's clowning on LSU and Brian Kelly, as we should, but like both teams looked good. It wasn't a case of like, oh, you know, it was just like a crappy game for both parties. Like, no, like both teams like were playing very aggressive on offense and still taking those shots downfield. And that was really refreshing to see after a Saturday full of games that were just total slogs.
It really was. That was the one thing I really noticed is that both of the quarterbacks played decent games. And while LSU came up short and they're, you know, LSU, for better or worse, with Brian Kelly, at least they were aggressive and trying. But the thing is, their defense has actually stepped up. And I think a big reason their defense has stepped up to the plate is because they're playing that exact type of offense in practice every day. They kind of, they're prepared for that style of game. And I think that's going to serve them well throughout the season.
It's what scares me about Bama coming to Wisconsin here in a couple weeks. I'm terrified. Any other games, Randy, you want to point out that you really like this weekend?
I found the Miami versus Florida game very interesting because it's one of those cases in week one where you just have – it's hard to tell sometimes, was Miami really that great or was Florida just that bad?
I believe you called Miami fool's gold at one point in Jimbotopia.
I did. Okay, that's a little bit of a harsh statement for me to say that. I think they're a very good team, but, like, Florida is terrible.
I see. Is Florida terrible, just have a tough schedule? Like, I don't know what to make of it at this point.
They haven't even played the rest of their schedule yet. I was legitimately thinking about, like, bringing up to you maybe some kind of bet about what week this year is Billy Napier getting fired. Not if, but when.
Yeah, he's getting fired this year, obviously. Maybe if they lose to UCF, that could be, like, the final nail in the coffin. Because, like, honestly, man, if they lose to UCF and Mississippi State, they might only have Samford as a win this year. Like, this might be a one-win Florida.
If they lose to UCF, I could see them doing it after the UCF game so they can throw an interim through the grinder at Tennessee, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss.
It's interesting. Don't they have, like, one of the top recruited quarterbacks? Like, the number one quarterback recruit for his class came into the game at one point because Graham Mertz got hurt. It makes you wonder if he's going to jump the ship at some point. Like, the whole program, man, it's staggering how far they've fallen off at this point.
Yeah, Florida's kind of like this. We'll have a year one coach that'll do okay, and then he'll regress over the next 2-3 years, get fired, rinse, repeat.
It's just, I don't know. To me, they're a big enough brand. They're like a Texas almost, where it's like, they can only be bad for so long, but still, it's like, what's taken, man? Like, you have so much talent. You have so many resources. You can't
say, Cam Ward, Miami's quarterback, it was so great watching him. Again, cool. He took shots downfield. He looks cool. This is what I'm saying. There's like this point. You can tell if a quarterback is good or not just by whether or not he looks cool.
He looked so calm in the pocket. Like, he was so unfazed by any pressure. Like, every time he ran the ball, he literally just, like, walked out of bounds. And the defender also walked out of bounds. It was like he forces the defense to be soft.
That's presence. So great. But that's the thing about practicing, you know, down the field offense is it builds your quarterback's confidence instead of focusing so heavily on a misguided attempt at possession quality that they don't really try to force the ball downfield or air the ball downfield. Right. Cam Ward was ready. He was ready to throw it downfield. Even when they were winning, it was like they couldn't stop scoring because
how you win games.
I can't stop scoring. I play offense. It's what I do. What do you expect me to do? Not score?
Exactly. If it's working, keep doing it, man. You know? So, good for Miami. One final game I think we need to talk about. I hate to, you know, bring down the SEC too much here, but Notre Dame, Texas A&M, fantastic game. Shouts out to Marcus Freeman, hottest coach in college football, and shame on Mike Elko and the fans who drank the Kool-Aid. Do you think A&M is back or will be back anytime soon under the new regime?
It's hard to say what their long-term prospects are, but I think for this year, they're going to be a tough team that is able to stay in these types of games versus high-level competition. They have a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be tough to really get over a hump of more than, I would say, 8 or 9 wins total. But they're going to be tough. Sure. And they're going to be, I guess, maybe a refreshing change of pace because they're going to be a little bit more disciplined. Mm. It seemed like Jimbo's A&M teams, it was hard to describe what they looked like. They would, like, lose themselves the games that they themselves were somehow getting themselves in.
Undisciplined is a good way to put it, I think, under the Jimbo Fisher teams.
They would be disciplined for like 3 quarters.
Sure. Or much like the season, they'd be disciplined for like half of it and then just kind of fall off the rails at some point. Looking at their schedule, I mean, they've got a relatively easy schedule this year, man. They play McNeese, Florida, Bowling Green, Arkansas, Mississippi State, New Mexico State, South Carolina, no offense to Hash Brown, Auburn. I mean, they've got plenty of winnable games here. I don't think they're going to be a ranked team at the end of the season, though, at this point.
I could see them being ranked in the 20s. I mean, their schedule's very favorable for an SEC schedule. That's definitely true. Lucked out there. They lucked out playing Florida, Arkansas, Mississippi State, South Carolina.
It's the opposite floor of Florida.
Who knows what Auburn's going to do? I mean,
hey, they destroyed Alabama A&M this last weekend. What was it? It was like 70 or something. I'm looking at the score now. 73-3.
Auburn. Yeah, I'm a little afraid of Auburn because Hugh Freeze is a very legit coach. So
I know it's Alabama A&M that they destroyed, but like if you could beat any team by 70 points, you're probably doing something right. It's also
especially with the new clock rules.
Seriously, them and Ole Miss. Ole Miss won 76-0. How is this even possible? I mean, you guys won, I guess, 63-0. I guess you just score in every possession. It's the only way to...
I mean, there's a lot of, like, picks and quick... There's a lot of quick scores. Right. That's kind of what it is. Because, like, at a certain point, the other athletes just cannot keep up. And you're just... Your wide receiver is wide open because he's 10 miles an hour.
That's
10 miles per hour faster than everybody.
That's true.
You know, another point I wanted to make...
Please.
Since we had recently brought up both Florida and, I believe, Oregon...
Yep.
...and Florida State is we're seeing these old veteran quarterbacks go to programs and just not look... good. It kind of makes me wonder why they're being taken in the portal with DJU, Dylan Gabriel, and what's his face? I don't even remember his name.
Who does he play for?
I'm talking about Oregon, Florida State, and what was the other team I mentioned?
Florida, Graham Mertz.
That's right. So yeah, those three quarterbacks. It's like. At a certain point, I don't understand why these quarterbacks are even getting played when they've shown no improvement.
I know.
Versus versus a true freshman, because we've seen some true freshman quarterbacks already this season that have really looked very promising. And it's like, it's almost like their youth is a positive.
It is, dude. It's like, I'm like,
they're not scared.
They're like playing fearless. They want to prove themselves.
They're too stupid to be scared. And it's like a perfect quality you need to have in today's college football.
It's like, it's kind of like a wide-eyed freshman in college. Like, they don't know what they're in for. By the time they're a senior, like, they realize their limitations. They realize how dumb they are. But when you're a freshman, it's like the world is your oyster. You've got this whole life ahead of you, right? It's the same thing as academics. I'm telling you.
And that's what I noticed that about Kay Klubnik and DJU, is they look uncomfortable. They look scared to throw the football.
Yeah, yeah. Because they realize like, they're just, they didn't progress to where they wanted to. They're just kind of average quarterbacks. But I swear, like, their mentals are, like, below average. You know? It's like the it factor is... not only not there, it's like a detractor. It's the anti-it factor.
Their lack of confidence severely hurts them because they're not just letting it fly. I feel like if they would just let it fly and accept a couple interceptions, they would do better.
Like, these guys, generally speaking, are highly recruited because they've got good arms and they're, like, on paper, good athletes, right? They've got, like, the height, the weight, the speed, etc. It's like, just be athletic. Just be yourself, be athletic, and let it
run. Yes.
Yeah.
And I hate that we rate these quarterbacks by measurables instead of what they actually do on the field. Okay, I'm going to give you a good example.
Please.
Diego Pavia for Vanderbilt.
Big
he
fan.
Was the New Mexico State quarterback that destroyed Auburn last year, the week before the Iron Bowl. If you look at him play, if you go look at the Vanderbilt highlights from when they played Virginia Tech, he looks amazing. He's got this it factor. Let me give you an example. There were three possessions at the end of the game, including the overtime possession. He scored or got their team in scoring position in all three possessions.
Yeah.
One of the scoring positions was a last-second field goal attempt because, I mean, he ran out of time, right?
Right.
But I'm saying, if you look at him play, he looks confident. He looks cool. And you can judge a quarterback. You can legitimately judge a quarterback how good they are by if they look cool.
It's true. It's true. But what was his rating out of college, though, Randy? Was he a four-star?
Exactly. He's like a two or three-star. He's like a two-star because, he's a little bit shorter.
Right.
Maybe his arm's not quite as strong. But who cares? He gets the ball in the end zone. Drew Brees is retired. He was drafted 20 years ago. People should know by now that size and measurables don't really matter.
Russell Wilson. Short guy. 5'9". Yeah, I'm looking at Diego Pavia right now. He was a two-star project. JUCO. Let that sink in, guys. I mean, he used to play for New Mexico State. So this should give you an idea of kind of his trajectory. But yeah, if you play fearless, if you play confidently, that's kind of what's important in a quarterback these days. So... quarterbacks, dude, they're in short supply.
They good are. Ones, I that should is say. Very true. They are in very short
good,
supply.
Like, honestly, dude, the last few NFL draft classes, like, when was the last time we had a truly great quarterback? Like, Joe Burrow?
I think
like,
so.
Seriously.
To be honest with you.
I would, man, as a Packers, like, I mean, Jordan Love. Love him. But, like, if the Packers had the number one pick or whatever, like, heading into next season, like, I don't know who I'd want. I don't like, there's none of these guys.
There just
screaming.
Aren't many great quarterbacks right now. And it's funny because, again, in today's college football with these new clock rules, quarterback has elevated itself to such an extremely important position more than it ever has been in the game, which I think is actually a good thing for the sport because it allows teams that may not, this plus the new clock rules are really good for the sport because it allows teams that may not otherwise, you know, have been able to compete.
Yeah.
If they can get just a couple key players, they don't need the depth and a great quarterback, they are all of a sudden legit title contenders.
Quality over quantity possessions. You know,
you don't have to like freaking stack up 50 four or five stars on your roster
the crazy
over the course of a decade to be able to do it.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. I was very disappointed in Tyler Van Dyke, another transfer. I mean, we've got a four-star freshman that we recruited from Texas. Just start him at this point, I say. Just throw him in the fire. Like, why are we doing this, man? Like,
I wonder if he'll get playing time when you play Alabama.
When we're down like 60-0, why not throw him in?
But I'm saying, like, if Tyler Van Dyke, if it's like a, let's say, a three touchdown game and it's in the second quarter and Van Dyke just threw his second interception,
then
do you
maybe
pull him?
Yeah, the problem is we got another, like, Braden Locke, if you've heard of him. He's probably our second string guy. But I don't know, man. I just, in general, I miss when you, like, developed quarterbacks. Like, I'm jealous of Bama having Jalen Monroe, not because he's, partially because he's a great quarterback, but also because he went to school there. He committed there initially to Alabama, right? He didn't, like, transfer from another school and, like, you know, like, come in knowing an entirely different, like, offensive playbook and is trying to, like, you know, adapt to this new scheme. Like, no, he was a Saban guy, you know? And, like,
right. And he's developed.
I want that, man. I want that. I want my own team to develop my own talent, for God's sakes. Like, I'm tired of the portal. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, well, and again, we just talked about this. The rent-a-year veteran quarterbacks, yeah, they just aren't working out for anybody.
They're not. DJ,
I can't think of a single team that's worked out for.
Yeah, no. We're seeing, dude, LSU and USC are perfect examples. Like, they got these, like, no-name dudes who are, like, seniors and both come in and are just like, holy crap, who are these guys? These guys are, like, throwing insane darts. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I think a lot of it does come down to coaching, too.
True.
Coaching. Having a good quarterback, offensive-minded coach that knows how to coach him up. That's one thing I'm really happy about in this era of college football with DeBoer is he knows how to coach quarterbacks.
Bust. Michael Penix. That's actually one example of a quarterback who transferred.
Well, he transferred with his offensive coordinator, and he wasn't like a – he didn't graduate from Indiana, I believe. Like, he left after 2 years to be with his OC.
Mm-hmm. That is a good point, too. I mean, that's another thing about transferring quarterbacks. Like, oftentimes these guys will have different OCs, like, year after year. Like, Tyler Van Dyke, for example, I believe this is his, like, fourth different offensive coordinator in his career because, like, they had so much turnover at Miami. And it's just, like, at a certain point, it's, like, I don't know how you can expect anyone to, like, excel when you've had that much turnover with coaching. You know, year after year after year, you're learning a whole new system. Like, it's got to be tough for these kids.
But they kind of do it to themselves when they transfer like that. I don't know what is truly going through their mind if they kind of buy into their own hype too much and think money.
It's NIL, dude. I mean, yes. NIL. Yeah.
Yeah, but what's an NIL check compared to like a legit rookie contract?
I mean, true, but I think a lot of these guys realize they're probably not making the NFL, you know, especially a quarterback.
That's true. I mean, but I think a great quarterback would think, I can develop and make the NFL. I think if they had the mindset to think they can go into a situation and succeed as a random transfer, that they can also make the NFL with some hard work. You know what I mean?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think so. In a just world, that would be the case. But who could say,
Randy? A big part of Wisconsin's problem is like, does Luke Fickell have the time to develop somebody?
Dude, does anyone?
Like, that's kind of part of the problem because, like, these developed quarterbacks, that's now the most important position, it seems like, to develop and have homegrown.
Yeah.
Even more so than, like, linemen these days.
Yes.
Everybody else, you can plug and play.
Yeah.
But quarterback is best to have homegrown.
In all defense, I guess, even for these bad programs like Florida or whatever, like, being a college football head coach these days sounds like absolute hell. Like, I cannot imagine how hard of a job it is. And I know these guys are millionaires and they're getting bank. But God, do they have to work just insane hours around the clock? I don't know how they do it.
Exactly.
Madness.
All right, those were some good topics. Are you ready to move on to the actual games for week 2 now?
I guess we can talk about games for week 2. It's not as exciting of a slate, but there are a handful of games here. There are a few that strike my eye, but Randy, I want to hear yours first.
We have to talk about Texas at Michigan at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Game of the week, obviously.
We saw Michigan as one of those teams that struggled because of how they played offense versus Fresno State.
They got together at the end, but yeah, like the first half, I think it was like a pretty unnecessarily close game.
I feel like I'm overthinking this, but I really am scared to just say Texas is going to go in and kind of destroy them.
Oh, they will. I'm confident. I'll say that I had a whole spiel prepared, Randy, about how, you know, the USC got its big, you know, Big Ten win over the SEC, and now you guys can have Texas over Michigan, and we'll call it even kind of a thing. But no, like, dude, Texas looked really good. We haven't talked about Texas yet, but, like, I know they were playing Colorado State, but they looked really good last week. I don't know if you saw that game. But holy crap, they're offense,
dude. I
saw
parts of it. And I mean, like, part of it is like, yeah, of course their receivers are going to be wide open against Colorado State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their quarterback's going to make the throw to the wide open receiver, but how wide open are they going to be versus Michigan, and how is their offense going to look as a result? Because these week one games, we do see it frequently enough where one team will look amazing the week before, the other team will look kind of meh.
Right.
But then when they meet, the team that didn't look so good is all of a sudden able to adjust better. Sometimes you can get drunk on your own success very quickly and think you're the greatest thing ever and not kind of have that I need to be a step ahead mentality. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe a team like Michigan sees these are all the things I did wrong. We experimented with this and this. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to change and we're going to come out better. And while Texas is just like, well, why do I need to think about anything like that?
That's true.
What we're doing is working.
I will say this, and to bring it back to the original, you know, kind of topic we had this show, for what it's worth, with the new clock rule system, like, if Michigan is capable of stringing together a couple of very long possessions, just, like, running the ball like they do, right, and get, you know, force just a couple of Texas three and outs early on, like, they could control this game conceivably from the start, just because of how things operate now with the new clock rules, you know? So I think this is going to be the first really interesting game to see, like, what does a really slow team that wants to bleed out the clock look like against a team that is the opposite of that, that wants to go fast, that wants to throw the ball, that wants to score quickly. And just kind of see how, like, what happens when these two forces collide in this new era.
I feel like we did get a little bit of a taste of that in the Colorado versus North Dakota State game.
Mm.
And it was a very interesting game to watch, with the polar opposite styles clash like that.
I was unable to watch that one. Unfortunately, I was playing the game.
It was weird because the game would change pace. There were times where the games were very fast-paced for both offenses and the mm-hmm. very slow-paced for both offenses with mm-hmm. a lot of kind of three and outs and whatnot
right.
and a lot of short drives. And it's almost like both teams are trying desperately to change the pace of the game to their favor
right.
and force
right.
the other team to play at the pace they want to play at.
Hmm.
And that can kind of be hard to gain control of. It almost reminds me of, like, basketball, especially in the tournament,
yeah.
where both teams are trying to control the pace of the game.
Right. Right. I can definitely see that. It's going to be interesting to see. Again, I think Texas, it's not even that Michigan's bad this year. Like, I think Michigan's obviously not as good as they were last season. Like, you know, they're not going to win the national title this year or anything.
Right.
But, dude, Texas, like, I'll be honest, they look really good. Like, I would be terrified to face Texas right now. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Texas actually is back.
Yeah, they are.
Hard to believe.
It is what it is.
Other games this week in week two coming up here. Is that the only ranked matchup we have? I think it might be. It's not a super exciting week, unfortunately. Like, week one was such a, you know, banger of a week, but
there is Tennessee at North Carolina State.
Oh, that is technically ranked. Yes.
That is a ranked matchup, number 14.
The Duke's Mayo Classic.
Number 24 North Carolina. I'm curious what that's going to look like, because I keep hearing rumblings from certain people about Tennessee with Josh Heupel. They could have a really strong year. And I honestly don't know what they're seeing objectively to make that.
Well, they did destroy Chattanooga 69-3 last week. And I know it's Chattanooga, but still, a blowout. Dude, I'm just saying, like, a blowout is, in my mind, just, again, given how many teams did not look good this weekend. Like, to see
Here's
a team
the thing.
Come
Tennessee,
out.
Yeah. Tennessee went 9-4 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason to believe that they're going to have some amazing step-up year where I just don't see why people would say that other than, well, it has to happen.
Well, what year is this now for Josh Heupel, whatever his name is?
I believe it's year three. It's almost like people have put so much stock in them beating us in 2022. And even that year, they went 11-2, which is good. But
That's pretty good already.
I mean, it's pretty good, but I mean, they were clearly outmatched by Georgia.
I mean, yeah, most teams are, to be fair.
But I'm saying 3 years later, they're still going to be equally as outmatched.
It should be interesting, though. Correct me if I'm wrong, but hasn't Tennessee been recruiting really well lately? Like, top five class levels of recruiting well? I feel like, for what it's worth,
they've been recruiting well. I don't know if it's any, you know, better than what they usually do. They've always recruited somewhat well.
For what it's worth,
actually, their talent composite is not that high. That's sitting at 17.
It's a 12-team playoff, though. It's a 12-team playoff.
Yeah. For reference, Florida State is number 13 at the talent composite.
As we know, recruiting isn't everything. It's what you do with their talent. But no, like, Tennessee this year, man, they play you guys. They play Alabama. They also play Georgia. Two very tough games, admittedly. But beyond that, their only other ranked opponents are NC State and Oklahoma. So, like, there is a world where Tennessee could go, like, 10-2 and maybe sneak into the playoffs.
That is, what, a quarter of their entire schedule is, like, really tough opponents. That's kind of significant.
It is. If it's only, I mean, on the other hand, they've got Kent State, Florida, Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi State, UTEP, Vanderbilt. Like, those are all wins. Like, they're going to win at least 9 games this year.
That is true. Yeah, but, like, is a 9-win Tennessee – what is a 9-win Tennessee program? What is that? Are they happy with that? Like, that's just above average.
In the playoff era, I think a 10-win SEC team might make the playoffs. So –
that is true.
Keep an eye on them, man. They're 14th ranked. Don't hate. No, they're going to beat NC State. They're going to beat NC State. I'm not too worried for them.
All right.
Oh, an unranked game we need to talk about, Randy. It makes me mad how big of a game this is going to be. Colorado at Nebraska. I hate Nebraska. I do, but I'm looking forward to them actually destroying Colorado at home. I think it's going to be really fun to watch. Did I just offend your Big 12 champions?
Do you have any particular reason you think they're going to...
I don't know if you saw Nebraska last weekend, Randy, but they eviscerated a very good UTEP team, 40-7. They've got Dylan Raiola, who's a 5-star quarterback. Dude went like 19 for 27, over 200 yards, 2 TDs. I'll say it. I'm scared of Nebraska.
You know, this is a very interesting point because I remember hearing the hype about him where he flipped from Georgia to Nebraska, right?
Yeah.
And for him to be starting and playing well, I think Nebraska is going to be the ultimate test tube team to see how somebody – they have a decent amount of talent, right?
They recruit well.
Then with a plug-in great quarterback, how that's going to work.
Right. This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying.
That one piece.
I'm jealous that they're doing – I wish Wisconsin would do this. You recruit a good quarterback, start him. Throw them in the fire. And yeah, they're going to make mistakes.
You have to have like a certain base level of talent for that to work.
Right.
Because let me give you an example. Colorado.
The other team
on this point. They have Shedeur Sanders, who is an amazing quarterback. They have Travis Hunter and Jimmy Horn. But their team outside of those like three players is just awful.
No bueno. Yeah, not very good.
And as a result, they went like, what, 4-8 last year?
Yeah. So... I hate Colorado. I hate Coach Prime. So I'm looking forward to this. Like for once, I really will be cheering for Nebraska to dominate this game.
I would say it's very odd to have a quarterback that scores 31 touchdowns on 3 interceptions and passes for 3,200 yards and still only have a 4-win season.
That's what happens when you have a coach like Deion Sanders.
Yeah, that's true. That Colorado doesn't really have talent.
Speaking of bad teams, we have to talk about everyone's favorite disaster piece. El Asico is happening this weekend. Iowa State versus Iowa. Iowa's currently favored by 2.5 points, but get this, the total, 35.5. Would you bet the over?
The total
or under? Yeah.
Under.
Under. I think 100%. That's a safe bet. I think under 35 is pretty safe with this one.
So Brian Ferentz, I believe, who was the bad man they all blame their offensive problems on, that's from Maryland. Was it Maryland?
I'm not sure, but I'll take your word for it.
I believe it was Maryland. I may be wrong on that. Somebody can always correct me. Mm-hmm. But their offense looked just as horrible in week one.
Well, they scored, what, like 40 points? 40-0.
It's Illinois State, and it was like what 3-0 at the half.
Well, it's like
6-0 at the half.
It was a slow score. For what it's worth, looking at the stats here, Iowa did have 250 yards passing, 241 yards rushing. It's hard to say though, because again, it is Illinois State, right? And like they're going to be facing not a great Iowa State team, but an Iowa State team nonetheless that has some talent. I think the thing is, though, this game is cursed. Like, year in, year out, this game is just, like, inherently going to be sloppy in a way that just kind of inherently prevents either team from really scoring points. You know what I mean?
I get what you're saying. I mean, it's always kind of like that. That's why it has the nickname.
Right. Who do you think wins it, though? End of the day. Who do you got?
Iowa.
I think Iowa as well. Probably by like a
touchdown. No matter how good or bad these teams are, Iowa always wins the game no matter what.
It'll be like a tie game in the fourth quarter, and then Iowa State will like bobble a punt or something. You know what I mean? It'll be a punt will decide this game. I think that's
fair pretty to say. Much. Another game Another team I wanted to bring up and another game I wanted to bring up is actually Maryland hosting Michigan State.
Ooh.
So Maryland started out hot versus UConn. Granted, it is UConn. Okay. But I want to point out their quarterback stats.
Please.
20-27, 311 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions.
That's pretty good.
Mike Locksley was Alabama's offensive coordinator in, I believe, 2019.
Yep.
With Tua. And he knows how to coach quarterbacks. We have gone at length about how important the quarterback position is in this current iteration of college football. So I really do believe Maryland can be another kind of test team. I want to see how they work out with this type of quarterback play in this era of college football. Mm-hmm. And also another point about Mike Locksley I wanted to bring up was they showed like his weight loss transformation. It went from like 330 pounds to now like 240 or 250.
Ozempic?
And he... I don't know. He might have joined the Ozempic crew, and he looks significantly better. But all I'm saying is a coach, a lot of people have been saying because Talia is gone and he doesn't have that, you know, great quarterback in his back pocket, he's mentally checked out kind of thing. A man who is mentally checked out of his job and mentally checked out and just taking a paycheck doesn't go through a massive self-improvement journey like that.
You're right. Oh, my gosh.
So that's... I mean, I'm just saying that's a legitimate factor I'm putting into this Maryland team that I'm going to be curious to continue to watch them and Nebraska as the year goes on.
I'm looking up, guys, like if you're at home, Google Mike Locksley, 2024, Google images. He's, he looks like a new person. He hit the diff him.
He hit the diff him. That's right.
That's crazy. So good for him.
And also their schedule sets up very favorably. It looks like, I mean, they play USC. They play Oregon, and they play Penn State and Iowa, but I think they can beat Iowa.
Oregon's a free win. Dude, Oregon might be the second worst Big Ten team at this point. I mean, I'm so disappointed.
And speaking of Oregon, this is a good segue, because the last game I really wanted to bring up was the Boise State at Oregon game.
Boise State's winning. This is my lock of the week, dude. Oregon's, like, they actually suck. Oregon, quote me on this, Oregon sucks.
It's very curious because it's like, I feel like Dan Lanning knows how bad Dylan Gabriel is, and he still did a really good job of hiding all of that versus Idaho to the point where he set a school record of completions, but still didn't do anything.
Yeah, no.
But how is that going to look against slightly elevated competition? I mean, Boise State's a little bit more than slightly elevated competition, but it's still, you know, group of five team, right?
Compared to Idaho, though, they're like a pretty big step up, I would argue, in terms of talent.
But I'm wondering if they can use this week one game to kind of, you know, point some things out and springboard Dylan Gabriel into it.
Because Dylan Gabriel had to set a record to barely beat Idaho. Like that's like if Peter Gabriel, as I'm calling him, if Peter Gabriel has a bad game, I think Boise State cruises straight up. Like I don't think, dude, Oregon straight up is going to be a 6-6 team this year.
But here's the thing: he's not going to have a bad game. He's got great coaches that are going to know exactly how to call the game to get him in a position to throw just horizontal passes.
Horizontal passes,
and they will be completed.
They're making me mad, dude. I'm sick. I'm sick of the horizontal passes.
I'm sick of seeing them too. We're seeing them this year more than ever, and it's not the cool horizontal passes.
No,
remember like 2014 Lane Kiffin Alabama teams where we had freaking Blake Sims, and he would throw those horizontal passes to Amari Cooper, and he would take it to the house. Those were cool, well designed ripples of the offense.
Yeah,
not these reliant.
I'm just gonna check it down to the running back. Like, dude, just run the ball. Like, if you're gonna do that, just run the ball and design a good.
And these horizontal passes are rarely in a rhythm where the receiver can catch it in stride full speed.
Yes,
they need to be successful.
They're catching the ball like awkwardly, and they're about to get tackled right away.
They do it. They do it where they make the horizontal pass, even the easiest pass in the game for the quarterback. They make it even easier by having it be a pass where the receiver stops in his tracks to catch the ball. And that destroys the whole purpose of the horizontal.
Yes! Coincidentally, Oregon, remember under like Chip Kelly way back in the day, the spread offense, they're doing like motions and stuff and going wide. Like, it's not even that.
In stride.
Yeah, it's not that. It's uncool. Oh, my God. Dude, we got to become offensive coordinators. We teach these kids a thing or two.
We have to get the manifesto ready. It can be the Connor Stallions of our respective institutions.
I'm going to save Wisconsin, dude, because... Phil Longo ain't going to. Unreal. Any other topics, Randy? Any other games you want to cover before we call it this week?
I cannot think of anything. I think I covered pretty much everything I wanted to, especially in the first part of the episode.
Do you want to give a September Heisman, or is it too early for that? Because
it's
got mine.
Literally week one. I feel like in the spirit of it, we maybe should, even though it's week one.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with Diego Pavia.
Wow. Vanderbilt. Vandy's winning the Heisman?
He looked really, really good. That's all I'm going to say. There's another quarterback I'm thinking of that's a true freshman. I cannot remember what team he played for.
Okay.
But as far as sleeper team, if I can remember, I'll message you later
if
about it.
If you can
it.
Think of this guy or team, we'll be set, man. But, like, I'm – okay, my September Heisman, I'm not even joking on this one. I think Cam Ward is going to win the Heisman at this point. He looked good. Miami's got a really easy schedule this year. I mean, Miami's going to win the ACC. Right, they'll probably be like 11-1, and I think if he can just look cool, like he's gonna have highlights, and Heisman voters love highlights. So I'm going Cam Ward.
That is, I actually agree with that. I mean, my September Heisman is more of a who I want to win it.
Oh,
but if
enough.
I had to like make an actual prediction, I would 100% agree with Cam Ward.
Yeah,
he looks cool. Like you have cool. to look cool, and he looks amazing. Like, he just looks so freaking cool.
Yeah, dude. Speaking of cool, this is a weird segment. Have you seen the South Carolina quarterback?
I have not.
Okay. It just envision your head like the prototypical quarterback for, you know,
Chiseled jawline, Chad. No.
Chad. So his name is, I hope I pronounce this right, Lenoris Sellers. Look him up.
Yeah.
You are not gonna believe what you see.
It looks like a computer science or an electrical engineering student.
Representation matters. as a proud glasses wearer, to see a D1, Power 4, SEC quarterback, starting quarterback with glasses, who wears glasses in-game, I cannot stress enough how amazing this is to see. It is so cool to see. Like, why does no one wear glasses?
It's actually really funny and cool. I've never seen a player other than a kicker wear glasses like that.
And like the thing is, man, like I bet you a ton of players wear contacts. You know?
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's not like everyone's born with perfect 20/20 vision. Many of us have, you know, we're short-sighted, long-sighted, etc. I want to get this has inspired me. I want to buy some athletic glasses after seeing this kid. Cracks me up, dude. Good for him. Good for the sport.
Good for him.
I think that wraps it up, Randy. Once again, thank you for a fantastic episode of the podcast. Looking forward to this week's slate of games. Any closing words, Randy?
On Wisconsin.
Roll Tide.